This is Geekspeak, episode 33 of season 16. I'm Lyle Troxell, a software engineer, pool repairman, rodent catcher, father, and maker. How's that? Is that good?
That's pretty good. All right. It just doesn't even come close to scratching the surface.
I rarely do that intro to myself. Miles Elam, a software engineer, pedant, curmudgeon, and political junkie?
Yeah.
Nice.
Don't those two go together?
Pedant and curmudgeon?
No, curmudgeon and political junkie.
No.
And last but not least, Brian Young, a designer, iOS developer, and father of geeky children. Really?
D&D. It's big in our family.
Yes, I envy you. My kids have all done some D&D. My son's pretty hooked. Your daughter's hooked?
She's hooked. I'm afraid I'm going to be the DM.
Can we infect my daughters with your daughter's D&D hookedness?
I have a series of videos to send them. They'll see the whole experience and know what to do.
D&D. That's Dungeons and Dragons, Miles.
Yes.
It's a game you play with dice and books in brain.
Yes.
No, D&D. If you do it right, you're doing it all with an iPad now.
Oh, really?
D&D, guaranteeing that teenagers remain celibate for as long as possible.
Work for me, baby.
This is horrible. Anyway, so I opened up a Pandora's box with that one. I'm really sorry for it. Anyway.
You guys hearing my phone call?
What's going on over there?
So I've got a laptop sitting up to record us so that the special patrons that support the show at a neat level that get to watch what we're doing when we do it live, those guys are up on top of a hat on top of my daughter's dresser. And that's my laptop. So my iCloud account's logged into that. And then I have a phone in my pocket, an iPad in a backpack, and a laptop in front of me. And when my phone rang, all of those started ringing. There's nothing I can do about it, really, except for try to cancel or something. It's very annoying.
If you do not disturb on one device, does it affect all devices?
No, it doesn't. In fact, this is one of the big things that people complain about to Apple, that they haven't sorted this out so that it kind of knows what device should be doing the ringing. And stuff.
You know, clicking on decline on my phone did cause my laptop across the room to stop.
How many seconds?
It was a couple seconds.
Well, but I'm thinking along the lines of, yes, we've made it so that when you get a phone call, it will show up on multiple devices, but we can't figure out how to have it so that when you click do not disturb, it stops. The complexity difference there is just so... What?
The other thing I just realized right now is that was actually a secondary problem, is that that was someone that has my Google Voice line, which is my public GeekSpeak phone number. And so that's a Google Voice line, which causes all my machine Chrome accounts that are logged in to that account to ring. So that's why it was ringing over there. Anyway, enough about that, I think.
Are we sorted?
What were we talking about? D&D? You were insulting D&D? Shut up.
No, I played D&D with you.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I fell asleep.
Were you playing a cleric?
No, I was playing a charlatan. A gnome charlatan.
Are you talking about a bard? Well, a charlatan as in the subclass of bard?
I guess.
No, yes. You weren't taking that game seriously.
Wait, what can a known charlatan do? Everybody knows about it.
Now, don't you remember, Lyle, my name was Much Tang?
God, I think I'm trying to suppress that.
We won't go any further into that.
So what you're saying is we rolled the character and then you went to bed.
No, I stayed with the character. In fact, it kept going into these absurd situations where I'm like, well, I'm a charlatan. I guess I'll just try to BS my way out of this. And I always got the role.
I recall you having like a 19 charisma, so you could do anything. It was really annoying.
No. I did
Good thing not like that.
I was the
life.
Only one there who didn't have a 19 something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. But I got the role on everything. And I'm like, oh.
I win again. All right, moving on. Maybe Miles should GM the kids, and you and I can go out drinking or something.
I was about to say it'd be awesome, but that'd be doubly awesome.
Yeah, it would be. All right. Miles, talk about Bluetooth and home security, please.
A very large... we just said we weren't going to inhale deeply before we did a story. What did
it's
I do?
The exhale's a problem. Yeah. But go on.
A big thing about home automation that people have been going for is the fact that they can replace their deadbolt lock with this electronic piece of schmack-a-schmack that allows you to use your phone to unlock the doors.
And what's the benefit of that? What kind of side effects do you get?
the fact that you can have your phone in your pocket, walk up to your door, and it just unlocks. You don't have to do anything for it. The fact that you can use NFC on it, like to unlock onto your phone, it unlocks there. It's one fewer thing to carry.
You don't have to carry a set of keys.
Right.
Well, and also, you can like assign somebody else access too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be great to give a temporary key for a temporary time or something like that. Mm-hmm. What about power? Do those things run on batteries?
They do. So you need to have them wired somehow to mains or...
Change the batteries
very often.
I ran an Omnilock system at the UCSC when I worked there, and the whole building I set up with Omnilocks. And it worked with a Wi-Fi, a special Wi-Fi network, which is kind of a pain, but it had batteries, and you had to swap them out, and it was one of the things I hand off to an intern.
I just think of like the scary movie where you're being chased by the evil villain with a chainsaw axe with a machete attachment, and then you go to unlock the door, but... You're like, why won't it work? You take out your phone. You're like, why won't it work? I need to get out of here.
Damn, yeah. I'm too sweaty. My content ID won't let me in.
Damn, the batteries.
And
How's that for messing up your horror film memes?
Yeah, that was the wrong sound effect for Chainsaw.
At any rate.
I mean, speaking of horror, have you seen the new kid horror movie or television series, Stranger Things?
I have not.
Oh, have you seen it yet?
No, I don't know.
Oh my God, watch this thing. It's so great. And I'm not just saying that because it's a Netflix title.
I'm actually very angry about the Home series.
Home?
Yeah, it's based off of the movie Home, the Boove, and...
I don't know the show. Home Alone.
No, it's a movie called Home.
And what's it about?
On the surface, it's about an alien species that conquers the planet, and then
is it like the V series?
No, definitely. And sends all the humans off to Australia, what they call Happy Humans Town, because they're like, hey, the Boove are coming here, and everything we do makes everything great, so you can just go over there. And it's one of the few movies that I love that my daughter's being raised with, because it covers cultural appropriation so well.
Now I realize the movie. It's a Pixar title.
Yes.
It's Pixar? Yes.
Or, that was DreamWorks. No. DreamWorks.
Oh, don't do that around my wife.
Well, same difference. So it's only because Mel's not here. So, yes, and the Boove, right. It's a great, that's a great title.
Right.
Great movie.
I'm enjoying and it. The TV show?
Not so good.
Everything about the movie that I loved was gutted and... Mm-hmm. Made silly and
so let's get back to Bluetooth and
anyway,
locks and things like that.
Bluetooth smart locks. Apparently 75% of them can be hacked.
Of course they can, because they're Internet of Things.
I guess we need a new segment, IoT security problems.
Well, and then just do a list and go like, and in this week's Internet of Things, 75% of all Bluetooth smart locks.
This is a Bluetooth item, and its security isn't up to snuff.
Yeah, because it's actually one of the protocols that was done pretty well with security.
With Bluetooth, right? The models made by QuickLock, iBlueLock, Plantrico, Seomate, LSCycle, VNs, Okidoki, MeshMotion.
What kind of security vulnerability is it? Do you have to be involved in the pairing sequence, or is it irregardless of pairing?
You don't have to... you can sniff, for example, passwords in plain text, like the transmissions for there.
Wait,
so they just implemented Bluetooth wrong, because Bluetooth actually has good pairing and security.
Anyone with a $100 Bluetooth sniffer can just pluck passwords out of thin air.
That's not just wrong, that's terribly wrong. I mean, so, they could have easily done this right.
So where do you find out?
And then they can change the password so you can't get in.
Perfect.
The user can't reset it without removing the battery.
Which they have to do every week anyway.
And they can't remove the battery without unlocking the lock.
Bum, bum, bum. So you just wait for the battery to drain down, or you can't unlock it? Can you change it?
Is there a physical way in?
What happens if the battery dies when it's locked? Are you just...
I don't know.
That's a good point. Question. Blowtorch is always the answer.
So some of the lock manufacturers were saying that they... used encrypted user passwords for the Bluetooth transmission. Not all of them did, but we encrypted it. However, they found that many of them sent the encrypted password out over the air, so then you could just grab that and then use the password.
The encrypted password again. Yeah, it's more complicated than
that. The lock would unlock without the password ever being decrypted.
Right. Of course. Yeah. You just go, what was the encrypted password? Let me just send that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, replay attack.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Also so how do you find out if you want to buy a Bluetooth deadbolt? How do you find out which ones are of the 25%?
Well,
I guess Consumer Reports or something of that nature.
Well, you can look at the link on the GeekSpeak website and
not buy one of those.
Not buy one of the ones that the manufacturers listed.
And hope that our link was completely complete.
Yeah. But I have to be honest, I am not enamored of them. No. I know our Southern California Geek correspondent, Alex, has one.
And he's a security expert.
And he liked it.
But I bet he got the right one. I'm going to do a show with him really soon about home security stuff, because he's kind of an expert on routing and things of that nature. We both got the same kind of router. So when I do that, I'll try to ask him what unit he got and is it hackable.
Right. But that whole thing about you either have to connect it to mains power or it has a battery on it.
That is a big topic.
I was just like, this is a deadbolt lock. Like, the fact that it's reliant upon electricity has problems. It's like what I was talking before about a water pitcher filler a few weeks ago. It's like, oh, how do I get the power going to the Arduino to be able to do the water sensor? Just use a toilet-style float switch. Like, you're done.
I mean, at the same time, I don't have keys anymore for my car because I've got one of those electronic fobs. I never take it out of the pocket. It's just, that's fantastic. I do like that idea. I would use that in my home if it was that easy. At the same time, I like the idea of a fob, but I don't want to carry another fob from my house. But I do have my phone all the time, so it makes sense, and the kids have phones. Like, I kind of get into the idea of it, but I definitely wouldn't want to be battery-operated. That's insane.
But a car has a battery in it, and that battery gets recharged every time you run it. With an electric car,
has a battery in it as well, and you do have to change those out.
Yes, but not very often.
Right.
The problem with fobs in my car keys, you only have to change them once every 3 years, but when it comes up, it takes me like a year before I get around to doing it.
Good thing. It lasts that long. Let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
You have a story about... do you even play Pokemon Go?
You know, I tried to open it 3 different times, but it was in the first couple days, so I never got it open.
No, but have you played since?
No, I still haven't played.
It's great.
Is it great?
I caught like a thing of a jig down on the property today. It was wonderful.
Wait, you've got Pokemon on your property?
I do have Pokemon on my property. And now that I boot up, when I boot up on the property, it says, do not trespass while playing Pokemon Go. Clearly, there was a lawsuit there.
So, how's your battery?
I have an iPhone 6 Plus, and I charge it whenever I possibly can, because I know about lithium ion batteries.
Yeah, so no problems
for you. I haven't noticed it. Then again, I don't ever hatch any eggs. Now, hatching eggs requires you to have the app in the foreground and move around. And when I move around, I normally am doing other things like reading or listening to podcasts. I'm not like having Pokemon as my main, and I can assume then you use a lot of battery power.
Yeah.
It doesn't operate much when it's not in the foreground.
Right, but that's the whole point of the game, is to be walking around with it.
I haven't hatched any eggs at all.
Yeah. Well, I just love the fact that this game has had such an impact that it's actually noticeable in the market for extra batteries for your phone.
They have had,
the last 2 weeks, they've had a 100% increase in purchases. I don't know how long that can last, but
that's kind
of
cool.
And one of the bright sides of Pokemon Go is that they have anti-cheat technology in there to keep everyone on the same playing field, and you can write apps for it, except for the fact that the anti-cheat technology was broken in 4 days.
What do you mean anti-cheat? How do you cheat in Pokemon Go?
Because you can make apps to work along with it. You can also...
On Android or... Interesting. I mean, it seems like it's, in iOS at least, it's relatively
also
hard to have a sidecar
app. There's also cheat detection to be able to find out, for example, did you get all the Pokemon you said you got? Did you enslave creatures, as many creatures?
Will you stop with the enslavement thing? they need to be helped. Ooh, that sounds bad.
So wait, what exactly are they hacking to cheat? Are they getting...
He doesn't know. He hasn't even played the game. He's like spending time being a father and a farmer. It's not even fair to ask.
Are they hacking into the internet API or something?
I believe so.
I think the API is open to some degree, because there are other apps that show you like where location information is. So clearly, you can access it.
But yes, I have not played Pokemon Go. I haven't played... I don't play D&D.
Wait,
I haven't
played Pokemon Go. Brian?
Well, I just answered
you
that. No, I tried
you
to
and
open.
I were in Vegas, and it was amazing there.
I was working.
Is it possible for me to give you guys homework assignments for GeekSpeak? Will you both please just run Pokemon Go? Just need a Google account.
I want you to contact my high school teachers and find out how well the homework assignment worked out with me.
Okay. That'll be my
homework
assignment.
I did well on the test, but
I'm sure you did. You're a very smart man. So, you're saying it uses your battery and people are buying batteries.
Yeah, it's just, this has been such an enormous, what do you call it? Fad? Movement? Thing? Such an enormous thing that it
improvement
has...
improvement in society.
It has doubled the purchases of batteries over that two-week period. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Although, I don't know, these people must not be going to conferences, because that seems to be the thing that people give out a lot now.
Miles, I saw a picture on the internet this week that was surprising to me, startling, and now you have a story about it. It was a roadway with a large vehicle on top. Like, can you please explain this thing? It is
about
unbelievable.
A year ago, we were covering a story about...
We did.
Yeah, about China making a bus that straddled two lanes of traffic. So it didn't compete with the roads. It actually doubled up on them. Think of a double-decker bus, only it's the top level and it's twice as wide as normal.
So you have two lanes of traffic, mm-hmm. and on the outside of that are wheels that touch down.
Well, no, they're tracks.
They're tracks. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
They are tracks.
Well, so it's
I was just going to say, it's like all those cartoons where a car comes up to the traffic and it does the elevator thing where the wheels stay down and it extends up and drives over the traffic with its wheels going between it. Only this is actually tracks and it doesn't elevate. It just stays at that height.
See, what's lovely about that is that you don't need any more infrastructure except for two tracks on both sides of the lane. That's it. And the vehicle just does it. And you use the same amount of space. It's very cool.
But here goes a concept.
Yeah.
They've actually made the prototype. There's an actual bus now running in China that you have two lanes of cars going underneath it as an it's an overpass.
Is there like a divider between the cars and the track? Or is it like you could run into the track if you change lanes wrong?
The track is level with the ground.
Right. So you can drive over it.
You can drive over it.
You just want to avoid hitting the bus. Well, I mean, it seems like if I was driving along and I'm looking in the rearview mirror, you might miss, you know, a 2 foot wide giant wheel that comes from space. Like, it feels like it might be something.
No. It's more narrow than that. The thing looks like it's only about a foot wide, but it's no different than a motorcyclist driving between lanes, right? But
except for it kills you and you don't kill it.
But beyond that, if you look in your rearview mirror, you see it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's massive. That's true.
Yes, it's true. Very large going up, so it's going just underneath a standard freeway overpass.
So what you're saying is, you see it coming up on you, and you're too scared to change lanes because you're like, there's a monster behind me. The cat bus is behind me,
and so every car stops, and the traffic gets worse, but everybody on the bus gets to work.
So it really is kind of comical and cool. Is it wide enough for semis? I'm assuming tall enough, I mean, for semis?
I don't know.
What about turning? Like, it seems like how long does it have to be for to turn? The outside wheels got to be really wide.
You're talking from the point of view of American roads.
Yeah.
And the typical ones, and the ones in California, the ones we're familiar with. So semis just go under
bridges.
An overpass.
Right.
So, no, there's no room for a bus... there
as well. So this is so has to be done in systems where you've got enough space for it,
right?
And the other thing is, it could be non-truck lanes, right? Like, truck lanes are segregated to one section, but what I'm talking about
truck lanes are usually the right hand lane. So
let's say you decide this bus is normal depth. Is it the normal length of a bus, or is it longer? Because here's my problem.
It's a long bus, but it's obviously
wide.
It's two lanes
let's
wide.
Say the road turns. Okay. The road turns, which means that, I mean, the whole reason why we have differential systems in our cars is that when you turn a car, the back wheels don't turn, but the outside of the turn, the wheel turns a lot further because the radius is longer. So the curve is longer, if you will. So when this bus turns, the outside of it has to turn a lot faster. Like, it seems to me it's going to have problems on turns where the vehicle is going to come into the lane space more than it should.
Well, you're describing like an axle, though. There's no axle here. There'd be no room for cars.
No, there's no axle. But I'm saying that the wheels on the outside, like the curve that it has to do, means that it's going to come into the lanes. If you take a look at the outside lane is longer than the inside lane. Or another great way to think about this is just the Olympics, right? You take runners on a track, and when they start and they're going to go more than a curve, you'll see that they stagger quite a bit because the outside lanes travel a lot longer.
The runners don't stagger. The lanes stagger.
If the runners don't stagger, they stagger, they lose. So with this vehicle, if it's two lanes wide, it's going to have the lanes of traffic. It's going to come into the lanes on turns more than you'd expect.
Well, maybe they just chose straight roads.
Straight roads only. double-decker buses in Sirius, two lanes or straight roads only. Okay. Okay.
I think it's awesome, okay. But I'll still take a Hyperloop over that.
So, this story you've got now.
There are two different purposes. Hyperloop is long distances
and speed.
Very fast. This one is carrying 300 people at once from, you know, point to point within a city. So
is it 300 people?
Yeah, upwards of, yeah.
Oh, that's a big bus.
Yeah, it's the one in China doesn't really have much in the way of seats. So you just kind of stand in much the way you would in a subway.
But you're standing while you drive over cars, which is really cool. This week, we saw a story which made all of us think of Ben and maybe buying one of these units for Ben. So
yes,
can you describe
why we
thought of Ben and his little home gardening experiences?
First of all, this is a project you could do by printing it out yourself on a 3D printer. So that's right up Ben's alley far as some Rube Goldberg put together crazy invention that helps you grow food. So you might have seen this floating around the internet. The FarmBot video seems to have caught a lot of eyes, but I started looking into it a little bit deeper than just the video. So what the video shows is a standard rectangular garden bed.
Yeah. We have those.
Yeah, it looks about 6 feet long and maybe 4 feet wide, maybe 3 feet wide. And the whole idea is this robot, which is nothing more than a two wheels that can move it from one end of the garden bed to the other, and a track that a little robot can sit on above the garden, maybe
it
about
looks,
4 feet above the
it
garden.
Looks like a large.
Yeah, it's much the same concept as a digital plotter.
Yeah, like
very much like
plotter
a plotter
kind of thing. Yeah.
Only instead of putting a pen in there, you've got a robot that can do almost all the tasks that you need to do for a small scale farming operation, like planting seeds and watering and weeding and just keeping your plants growing. So, when I started looking into this, the amazing thing about this is what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the costs for automated vegetable growth down to the point where this is competitive with grocery stores and it'll pay for itself in a matter.
Oh, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
The thing I don't get about that is that gardening.
Okay.
I
okay.
mean, planting
yes.
and watering. That's about what you do. Like I mean, that's all it does. And that's like the basics. But then there's the picking. It's not going to pick the squash for you.
No, it's not going to. I haven't double checked to make sure it doesn't pick the squash. I don't believe it picks the squash. But
yeah.
the whole idea here is, yes, there's people that enjoy gardening. Your wife loves to garden.
It's true.
It is a helpful.
I'm gonna buy that for her birthday.
Yeah, right.
What?
I mean, for some people, this is totally meditative and it helps their soul. But for other people, they maybe just want some fresh vegetables. They don't have to go down to Whole Foods or Whole Paycheck to buy.
I have to be honest. I was very skeptical when you showed this, and I didn't want to rain on anyone's parade, but yeah, now I'm going to rain on everyone's parade. one of the hard parts about growing is clearing the plot to begin with,
right.
And I'm not
That's
so sure that this
only problem really
that this robot can do that.
No, the robot doesn't do that. The first thing you do is you make a beautiful bed for it. Then you put it with the robot.
Right.
And the robot does the simple stuff.
Yeah.
Like
but
watering
you,
and seeding, like putting seeds in the ground.
But
really?
Once you prepare that bed, it's going to be ready for the next year as well, because this thing's going to take care of the weeding for you.
It's not going to pull the plants at the end of the like. It's not going to pull the tomato plants. Also,
come on,
tomato plants.
A couple hours on a Saturday at the end of the season.
That's the other thing about this is this gantry that this thing is on is like 2 feet above the bed. That's not a tomato plant. You notice that the video that it shows
okay, that's
like
not
all
the
these
tomato
herbs.
Plants that your wife grows. That's for sure.
That's true.
No, and then there's the it waters for you. That's what drip irrigation is for. You get a timer,
right.
You put it on there.
Like,
oh, wait,
you don't
hard.
Have to do anything.
Well, actually, it is because I never finish setting up my drip irrigation every year because I want to get some plants watered at one rate and other
so
plants watered
saying,
at another rate.
So what you're saying is that you will spend the 7 hours to program the robot, but not the 2 hours to set up your drip irrigation.
No, the ideal is you're not programming the robot. It knows where the plants are. It's making sure that that plant will grow up and shade over the place where the weeds will grow, and that it's going to make sure it distributes it in a way that you don't have a monoculture bed and it's all mixed together. And you
okay, so the non-monoculture bed is kind of interesting.
And it's powered by
electricity.
By the solar panels you just paid for.
Brian, I think that what we need to do is buy you a set of this, and then you can try this out.
I'm not paying for that.
And when I say we, I mean you should pay for this.
So there's an expensive way to do this and a cheap way to do this.
Okay.
And the cheap way is, of course, a lot of labor. and
you,
printing
you
out.
You build it yourself.
Yeah, you build. Well, you build it yourself out of 3D printed materials.
Okay, but wait a second. An arm that goes back and forth across a bed that can deliver water and can pull things out of the ground is not the complexity of gardening. That's the easy part. Watering is like really easy. I mean, true, it's repetitive if you want to put, you know, maybe with this system you use less wasted water because it's going to inject it into the stem. But you got to keep in mind that it could hit, if the stem grows too high, it's going to hit the plant. How is it going to know to not hit the plant? It's going to have little sensors on it that will raise it up a bit higher.
Irrigation.
I'm feeling, I don't know.
You guys are really down on this.
Oh, but well, because we've got a lot of gardening.
My garden has sat empty for 2 years because
You don't have a robot.
I don't have time.
If you don't have time, you don't have time for a robot. I'm just saying.
I would have time one weekend.
I can see it. I'll call. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. Brian, I'm really lucky because I don't have to water tonight because it's raining. You better get your robot inside.
So in 3 years, when there's some guy that comes around and sets up 5 robots for each person in their house, and nobody has to do anything other than sit and pay that guy to turn the soil every spring, you guys won't be laughing
anymore.
You know what?
To turn the soil? What are you talking about?
That's called being a husband. You fool.
And think of how much time husbands will have back in their life.
Actually, I have some great video of Becca when she is a little more than 8.5 months pregnant running a rototiller.
Nice. See that? Robots there, baby.
She was done being pregnant. So she's like, the doctor's like, yeah, if you go in.
I love that the rototiller's like shaking. Yes. Come on, man. Come on, get out of here. It's awesome. That's homesteading. So, I'm glad, Miles, that you and I finally agree on something, but this doesn't seem like the case where a robot's useful.
I'm glad you're finally right. Anyway.
Hey, so, I rarely post stuff on Facebook that's political, because what happens when you post political stuff on Facebook? What happens, Miles?
Then I start telling you you're wrong.
You find out all the people you know that are not ideologically aligned with you. So I decided
that's not true. There are a lot of people who are not ideologically in mind with me. It's just that, and this is, of course, my personal opinion, but when people say it's just my opinion, yeah, that's fine. But as soon as you put it up on Facebook, that's, here's my opinion, everyone.
To your closest friends.
Yes, and if you don't consider me your closest friend, then...
So this week, I was going to be really just very gentle about this. I just was like, okay, I started with, I'm not a political person. I'm a technical geek, right? That was my opening. And, you know, 50 lines later, there's like Nazis being thrown back and forth at each other. Like, it's nothing you can do. I mean, all I tried to say is that our culture is biased towards men and against women. That's not a big, giant, amazing statement.
Someone Godwinned that. Nice.
I just was, you know, I said like 3 things, you know, like money going towards a direction causes, you know, shift in people's opinion. People are not logical. You should look at how you think, why you think. Mm-hmm. And then the last one was that we have kind of a misogynistic society. Like, there was nothing, I don't think there's anything out there about that, but that degraded
you have no idea how out there that
I
was.
I do though. Now. God, it was so painful. Like, people I like and respect and love
there
just started bickering.
There are millions of people the voting thing that was for so hard, he who shall not be named.
The thing that was so hard about this was that as people posted this, I was like, I you know, went away for 10 minutes and saw it. And there's like people I know from different worlds fighting with each other to a level that is just disgusting. Like, I know and respect each of these people, and then they do this to each other. It just gets nasty quick. And so I'm like, should I shut this post down? Just delete the whole thing? No, I'll let it argue, you know, and I just turn off notifications on it. But it's hard to decide where you want to stand on things, where you don't want to stand on things, and how much you want to engage this conversation. The entire time, Miles, I was thinking about you, because I know you spend a lot of time arguing on Facebook.
That's funny, because the arguments that I get into on Facebook, or at least the one in particular that's coming to mind, was gun rights came up. A SFPD officer was arrested for home printing an AR-15 equivalent, or machining it, or anyway.
Why was he arrested for that?
I don't know the details. It was because he didn't have a bullet button on it, and it's required.
What's
for
a bullet button?
A safety?
Do you mean safety?
To eject the magazine, you need to push that button. You can't just be a general press. There actually has to be a button for it.
So it's something illegal about the weapon.
Yes. Okay. And so they were going like, this is BS. And then I was talking about, well, but at the same time, that's the law. And if he's a police officer, then
he should be held law.
To it. And, sure. and then, but he's a police officer. He knows more about guns than the average person. You should give more slack. Went back and forth on that. And it started getting acrimonious, but it didn't devolve to Hitler. Yeah. It went in terms of.
Mine didn't either. I was just exaggerating.
It went to the.
Not that much though.
No.
Yeah. It went to the merits of the Heller decision and what happens now that Scalia is no longer a justice, and it was a very the people who posted the thing in the first place who were not part of the back and forth were actually saying, we have awesome friends, like you guys Good. Talked about this and you were really at each other, but it wasn't about that's because your mama is ugly type of response,
right.
but a here's the Supreme Court precedent and here's what the intent was and here's the da da da.
All right, so you've got a story around this is why I led into it, so tell me about trolling the internet for political gain.
Actually, that was
you?
Me.
That was me.
I don't know how that got put right
it's
after my other
and
story.
It's mine.
Oddly enough.
Well, because he has to redeem himself out of that farm bot story.
Hey, now. Now you're getting personal. So there was a lot of stories about trolling this week, and a lot of it falls out of what's going on with the political race between the presidential candidates. And I've got an article that we're going to put up on GeekSpeak that specifically talks about Trump. But what I want to point to,
just in case, I realize this is not definite, but can we talk about what trolling is?
Well, that's what I'm
just to make sure.
That's the whole point of this.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get into the politics of it. I want to get into this whole trolling thing because trolling's been around, well, since people have been around.
Forever.
But this post I'm referring to, which is by Dave Weiner, he's the guy that first wrote up the RSS spec. He has been around a while. And he's
one of the people that wrote RSS. One of,
you corrected me that sure. on another show.
Okay, so now we're going to have to say what an RSS is.
No, we're not.
What is trolling?
No, we are.
Trolling. So
RSS is Real Simple Syndication. It's what powers podcasts and blogs. Go on.
Thank you. So trolling. So his whole argument is about trolls and let me back up. So trolls, what is trolling? Trolling is somebody who gets involved in a discussion and who just throws out arguments for inflammatory reasons without trying to actually get into a reasoned discussion. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yep. They're trying to anger people and they get off by angering people.
And I'm going to back up and I'm going to even take trying out of there, because even in your discussion you're talking about on Facebook, there were people trolling and they don't even know they were trolling.
Ooh, I don't know if that's trolling.
Oh,
that's just ignorance. Yeah. No, I don't know. Is it intentional?
Trolling requires intent.
Well, I don't know if it's intent. That's interesting. Because
requires intent or extreme ignorance.
Yeah, well, there you go. If the person doesn't know they're trolling and yet it's indistinguishable to the other people in the discussion, is it trolling?
Okay, so it's kind of like Poe's Law.
What's Poe's Law?
Sufficient fanaticism is indistinguishable from satire.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. I like that. Okay. So whether it's intentional or not, trolling.
Yes. So in this article, he goes on to make a case for what you do with trolls. And what do you do with trolls?
Ignore them.
Yes. So
trolling. And delete them.
If you have control over the discussion, yeah. Deleting them or at least blocking them from your feed.
Well, and that's the question. Like, do you remove people as friends from you on Facebook? I post everything on Facebook publicly because I figure it's basically public anyway. Like, why try to make it a private system when I don't control the security anyway? So I just assume that everything on Facebook's public. And in doing that, I get a lot of people because I make it public. So I get people that are definitely trolling.
Well, if your only choice then is to delete your post, then
I think I can delete their post too.
Can you?
As the person that started
you can.
It. Yeah. If they comment on your post, you can delete them. I don't normally do it, but I have in the past regretted not pruning earlier. And when conversations divulge into non-functional debate, then you go, well, we just wasted all this time because it got bad.
So on a Sunday morning and you post something like this, are you going to sit there all day long watching it?
No, I know. It's hard to know.
Something I wish Facebook would implement to anti-trolling technical solution that I've seen that I thought had great merit.
Delete?
No, because if you delete, that enrages the troller and they just post again.
They feel emboldened because they got a rise out of you.
Right. Or if you delete their account, they just create a new account.
Okay, what's the idea?
So the idea, and it's been implemented before, is you flag that particular post or that particular user and their posts aren't deleted. They can still see them, but everyone else can't.
Yeah,
so
nice.
As far as they're concerned, they're being ignored.
What services do this? I've heard about this.
It's in a lot of systems, actually. But it's an interesting idea.
But why with Facebook? Well, with Facebook, you require some more nuance than that because you have a lot of people who have different sensibilities. So I was thinking along the lines of if you have a post and then someone is saying something you don't like something just that you consider inflammatory, you can flag them as troll and then only the rest of their friends can see their post. That would be an interesting thing. And then your mutual friends don't.
Right. Not friends with them doesn't see it.
Right. Yeah. And then people can just go down the list.
To do that is just to kind of think of like the person that actually originally posted the entry decides how to do this. And they can do things with it. And they could do things like make that person flagged so that their friends can see that that person has already been kind of grayed out. Like, you'd still read the entry, but it's just kind of like, it's grayed out and you can't reply to them. Right? Like, it's muted in a public way. Because one of the things I don't like about this is that I don't want people to be sheltered from other people's feelings and ideas.
Right,
like that those are there. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to go down those tangents. I'd like to see that there's all this craziness going on and it just kind of be there, but everyone doesn't respond to it and everyone's aware of it. That's what
except the person who got flagged, in which case you want to be grayed. You don't want them to see
they
were grayed.
They shouldn't see it grayed. The coloring should only not be for them and not be for their friends. All right. See, we should just go over to Ben's work and tell him how to fix Facebook. It'd be perfect. He'd love that.
So Twitter doesn't have that feature, but Twitter, for people who are verified, they can filter out some stuff, right?
Twitter has some issues.
Deletion of posts.
That's actually from other people. Yeah, that's actually something that's a longstanding thing for Twitter, a longstanding
issue
barrier to their success is that if they don't figure out how to deal with bullying and with hateful comments, but things that are on that borderline that would affect a small segment, that are not in the large, for example, bullying on the small scale. Because if you're bullying someone who is a notable figure, it's really easy to see that huge avalanche and target them. Well, but when it's so diffuse over such a wide group of people, that becomes a harder problem. And right. So far, they've been trying, but it still needs a lot of work.
And this was a big issue just a couple weeks ago because of the actress that was in the Ghostbusters movie. Do you remember her name?
I don't. I saw the movie, loved it. They were all amazing. I mean, all the lead females, the actresses were just incredible in that title.
Yeah,
in fact, I don't know if there's any bad acting or bad performances in that show. I loved that. That was great.
I can't wait to see it.
You should
see it. Leslie Jones, thank you. One of the many articles that was about trolling recently was really focusing on her situation. And what she did was she wanted to retweet all these horrible posts to let everyone see all this horrible stuff so that they realize what kind of stuff goes on.
What kind of stuff she has to see. So she wanted to rebroadcast what people had said.
Right. So she engaged the trolls and she amplified the trolls. And there's, I guess, some merit to airing the dirty laundry.
Yeah. I kind of like that idea.
She retweeted them, but then she also closed her and she also quit Twitter.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah. So,
she quit and then there was this argument of bringing her back online. She might be back online. The people were, I saw it, one of the producers or the director come on a talk show and talk about how trying to invite her back online. Because, of course, one of the things you want to do to promote title now is you want to have your actors engaged with the public about what's happening. You know, going to a screening, doing this. Because as people like and follow you, you want that audience to pay attention to what is going on for you. That's part of what a production company is hiring when they hire you as an actor, is your entire following.
So you could say the trolls won in that case because they shut her up.
If she got offline, yeah. But at the same time, I don't blame her for it. I mean, it's horrible stuff that is being said. If I was in, you know, I'd stop doing Geekspeak if I was attacked at that level. I wouldn't be interested in it, right?
Right.
I mean, you don't want to be a public figure if the entire time you feel like everyone's attacking you. Yuck.
Well, in looking into the political issues, we were talking last week about how Russia was involved in the DNC hack, and yes, that seems pretty clear to us. Well, I'm going to bring it back to politics in a sort of way here, because there was an article a year ago in the New York Times that I totally missed, and it's largely not tech, but it's all about how Russia has set up a organization, and it's maybe governmental, maybe set up by somebody who's close to the government who's private, and its entire purpose is to troll the internet to affect public opinion.
Is it automated or is it a...
No, this is a... They call it the agency or there's multiple other names.
What does it do?
So the whole idea is started Russia-based, started just within Russia. And its purpose was to sway public opinion about various things. Mm-hmm. And it's old-fashioned propaganda in a new-fashioned social media world. Mm-hmm. They would post comments onto newspaper sites. They would post social media to sway public opinion, trying to get followers. And the reason why this was figured out, and this article is fascinating about the reporter piecing things together and talking to other people who have followed this. There are accounts that are obviously made all at around the same time, and they have very few other friends except for within this network that you can piece together. And it got to the point where in 2015, 2014, they tried to amplify and create a hoax, even here in America, around 9/11 date. There was this hoax that started on Twitter for Columbian Chemicals down in I believe this was Louisiana, and they went to the extent of making fake screenshots and posting them about this chemical explosion. And they made entire clones of news sites that their links would point to. So you would go there and you would see these news articles about
the... fictitiously created a news event of an explosion.
Yes.
Creating virtual newspapers that would report on it and everything.
Right.
Did it work?
Well, it did get some people outside that closed network to react to it.
Yeah.
But it did not work to the extent that it was national news and we understood that this was a faked event. But it literally is an organization that is set up to troll the internet to their means, mm-hmm. to whatever.
Really interesting.
It's fascinating stuff, but it goes back to the old adage of don't believe everything you read.
Yeah.
But I think everybody in this new age needs to be aware of how these social media mechanisms work so you can actually question what you're reading. And
well, it's also interesting because you're in a stage now where you expect your information to be available immediately. And so if it's not available immediately, it's almost not valid, right? And so therefore, your printed media is obsolete because even if it's a day delay, it's not useful in that moment, right? And so you're talking about online sources. What do you trust and how do you figure out what's real?
Well, if you really want to figure out, if you suspect or even if you don't suspect and it's some major event, click on the person's friends. Start investigating the social network that is available
or
to all of us.
3 hours and check New York Times.
Well, in this case, it wouldn't have worked. Right. Well, because it was local news sources you'd be checking. Yeah, if you check the New York Times, maybe. It's a fascinating article. There is much more detail in there. Right. And there are several examples of how this organization has tried to sway opinion, including an art exhibit in New York about Syrian rebels and about the Ukrainian rebels as well. And it's worth a read.
And you can read that up at geekspeak.org. It's the August 10th episode, episode 33 of season 16, 2016, obviously. And, you know, I don't promote the website as much as I could. I also don't promote the idea of subscribing to the podcast as much as I could. Sometimes we get large bumps on people that listen to the show via our website. I can look at the weblogs and how many times things are downloaded. And I just urge you, if you're listening just via a link, please do subscribe to our podcast. It's easy to do that. And that way you get delivered every episode and all that. You know all that. Okay, please do that. In any case, the longer form discussion I want to have today is something that I rarely like to talk about, and I'm a little concerned it might not be appropriate to talk about. I'm a little embarrassed and all these things. And that is that...
You should see a doctor for that.
Okay. but I think the two of you I respect quite a bit, so I'll engage in this conversation. We'll see if it makes the podcast. I've been dealing with rats infesting our chicken coop, and...
You need a robot for that.
I need a robot.
I have a solution for that.
A cat. You already gave me the solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you told me that. So the problem with cats, of course, is they'd kill birds. And I don't really want cats in my neighborhood killing birds. I like the birds that we've got. So in any case, I do have a BB gun. And I thought, well, I'll just take care of this myself by killing the rats with a BB gun. So one thing you have to understand about rodents is they're very good at getting away from light. They don't need a lot of light, so they operate in shadow and move quickly. And if you ever try to fire a BB gun quickly, you'll realize fast that you're not like Clint Eastwood in the movies. It's not really possible to shoot something when it runs past you. And if it is, you're being too careless with the weapon. Like, I intentionally am very careful with a weapon, even like a BB gun, because it's dangerous, right? And so I'd go out for an hour or two, not be able to get any rodents. Maybe sometimes I'd get lucky. And I went ahead and was like, looked up their eyesight. They don't see red very well. So I put in red lighting, spent money, got it delivered, put in red lights.
Is that why their eyes glow red when you shine a light at them?
I don't know. And then I was like, well, you know what? They really can't see is infrared. And so so then I bet some infrared lights, and I thought, well, I'll just use my iPhone, and I've got a laser sight thing on my BB gun, so I'll be able to use that. Did you know that the new iPhones actually have IR filters? So they don't pick up IR light. You'd have to scrape off the filter. You'd have to basically destroy the lens to get...
So you'd need an older iPhone.
Or the front camera on an iPhone would work. So I could, like, shoot over my shoulder or something. I don't know. So I grabbed an old iPhone 1, but it doesn't pick up IR well enough to really function. I'm going through all of this dilemma. And the reason I'm saying it's kind of embarrassing is because I'm basically anti-guns. Like, I've kind of got to the point in my life. I mean, I like guns. I'm enthralled with them. I'd like to shoot all those things. I don't have any firearms, but I have these BB gun, you know? And I've always been in this space of trying to play the line of, like, I think they're neat, and I don't think our society have them. I don't have a firearm because I don't think our society should have them, not because I don't want one necessarily. Also, they're very loud, and they're scary, and they're dangerous. But I haven't talked about this with you. Do you guys support the idea of firearms, like people having guns?
I grew up in a gun culture. Uh-huh. I grew up scouts shooting guns, and I look at them as a tool. But I also look at our society and how things have gone terribly wrong. So no, societally and nationally, I think we should definitely be doing something much stronger to either restrict guns or
curtail them,
or some massive education, something that we're not doing.
Miles?
I have shot a variety of guns, starting in the Boy Scouts, but then later. And they are entertaining at times, especially if you have adequate ear protection. At the same time, I also think that there are different cultures within the U.S. In other words, if you are in a very large city, a large urban area, I don't see the need in and of itself. I think that it does more harm than good. Mm-hmm. If you're in a very rural area, I can see how they would be quite useful for a wide variety of things. What it comes down to is, I think that the Second Amendment should not be an absolute right, like many people are trying to treat it. Think it should be, well, as of Heller, the Heller Supreme Court decision, it's the law of the land. They are an individual right and fairly unrestricted. But I think they should be as restricted as having a driver's license and operating a vehicle.
Yeah, at least.
And that, I think, would solve a great deal of problems, not to mention that if there is someone who is guilty of domestic violence, I think they should be excluded from the pool of people that would be allowed to have guns. Mm-hmm. Beyond that,
it's interesting because, of course, I'm using a pellet, an air pellet gun. It's not something, it'd be very difficult to kill a human being with one of these, right? They're very low power. At the same time, it's a gun, right? And it has all the implications of a firearm in our society. It's a rifle with a scope.
Wait, are you asking about the ethics of shooting rats?
That's a secondary thing, right? Like, I'm also using it as a tool that's obviously useful in the situation I'm in, right? I've got chickens and I've got a garden and I want to protect those things from rodents. Most people are okay with that at some level, right? Even if they don't want to look at it and see it, they kind of understand the idea of rodent control. And a lot of people use poisons. Like, that's a very common situation. If you have a problem with infestation of rodents, you get someone, you call a exterminator. What they do is they put a little black box outside of your house, and inside there are these little pellets. And when the rats eat them, they get sick, and they come out in the world, and they die, right? Poison. And then owls eat those, and potentially it damages the owl. I mean, it's not actually a good contained way of dealing with the problem, because, of course, the owl would actually hunt the rodents if it was in the right space, right?
Something like 1,000 rodents a year.
Yeah, an owl can be pretty effective. So in any way, trying to do it with poisons, which we've done before on the property I manage, it doesn't seem like the best way to go. So,
well, you've just touched on one possibility, which is setting up owl boxes.
Yes.
Nearby.
So the owl situation, though, is no matter how high you get the owl population up, you're still going to have rodents, right? Because you have to have them succeed enough to feed the owl, right? Like, it's not going to remove them completely. And in any case, I do have a lot of owls around. I have a lot of trees, and I can hear them and such. And snakes.
Yeah, I understand your concern with regard to birds. At the same time, we have some very tall trees that cats don't easily get up into. And just from personal experience, we had a major rodent problem. And we tried different things that were able to mitigate to some extent. Like, for example, when you have your feeder suspended from as opposed to laying on the ground.
Well, of course.
But
even then, seeds fall out of the feeder, go on the ground. Cats, if a cat's good at it, it'll get those birds that got on the ground. Like, I had cats growing up. Like, they're good at hunting. That's the whole reason why I want them, right? and I could, of course, also keep them indoors or, out of space in the daylight hours and only let them go out at night, and they would more effectively get rats. I don't really want a house cat. But the thing that was...
Well, no, not talking about house cats, because what we had done at our property is we got cats that were... they were feral, so not suitable for
petting.
Domestic life.
Right.
And they have been neutered or spayed, and basically they get someone to foster them or they're gone.
Right.
And so we ordered them. This is really geek speak. We put them up on, you have them up in a cage for about 2 weeks while you're feeding them and getting used to the area. So they imprint that this area is their area, and they get used to the smells and the landscape. And it was like flipping a switch. I mean,
they were gone.
They were gone.
How about the birds?
I still see birds around. Yeah. So I don't know.
I was definitely on the run to get a cat after talking with you. But what I found was interesting was this idea that as a human, I have the ability to engage with technology. Like, that's one of the traits that humans seem to have pretty good at, right? And so I went ahead and went this route of guns, which, and BB gun, but a gun, which empowers me to be a more effective hunter and killer. Right? Like, that's what a gun does, is makes a human being more effective with technology at killing.
And yet, if we were effective, there would be no rats, because human beings hate rats, but rats are extremely
everywhere.
Successful. Yeah.
And rats are really good at hiding from humans, right? They've got the low light vision, they can hide, they can move really fast. Anytime you turn a light on, they run. And if you can do a split second shooting thing, I guess it's possible, but now you're talking about serious training at the martial art level to be able to fire a handgun quickly, right? Because you're also in close combat. There's no way you're going to be able to do that.
And you're forgetting about you have to sleep at night. You're not going to stay up all night.
I also don't want to be in a situation where I'm training myself to be good at a gun. Like, that seems kind of counter.
And then you have to carry the gun with you at all times.
I saw rodents today, and of course didn't have the gun because my kids are around. It's on a lockbox, right? So then I hit up on it, and that is that we can make traps because we're good with technology. Rat traps are really good at what they do. You put a little food in them, you put in some place where your animals can't get to them, and then the rat does the hunting aspect and gets captured. It's really easy. So I find it fascinating that I was going down this track of infrared lights and infrared scoping equipment and, like, buying all this gear. I literally right now downstairs is a camera that I've been modifying to be infrared to attach to a scope to make this work.
When all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Versus this $4 piece of plastic and metal, which I could make myself if I really want to get into making things, because traps are kind of cool. Anyway... traps, obviously, don't try to make yourself into a cat. Like, go ahead and put a trap out.
You know what? We had rodents in our house. Mm-hmm. They came in because there were just all around. We put traps out and we caught two. And
so they figured out.
Not necessarily. It's just... I don't know if they necessarily figured it out, because they weren't that successful to begin with. It took a while before we even got the first trap, and then you have to look at the bait and always look for it, and then
clean it
afterwards.
It's a lot of work. It's not like it's totally easy. It's not as easy as poison.
Yeah. So why would you want to go deal with the body, for example, as opposed to have the cat bring it to you?
Well, I'm going to try traps for a couple weeks, and I'll report back if I get a cat. There you go. Should we move on?
Now back to Geek Speak.
I still think you need a robot.
You
can just go around and collect them all up.
It's really tempting. Well, I mean, what is a trap but a very simple robot with one command? That's
you need a trap on
one
wheels.
One sensor and one command.
Because you want a digital readout on your phone on how many you've gotten.
That's true. I should put an Arduino on a rat trap and I can find out how successful it is. What's up with so speaking of guns, right? You got some gun geek news.
No, this is Geek Speak. We got to talk about emoji.
Yes. Recently, Apple changed their emoji line. They changed the handgun into a water pistol.
How recently? It's not on my phone.
The emoji
I'm sorry,
icon.
It's for iOS 10 is the change. They announced it in the beta. OS. Yeah.
You're not running the beta OS?
I am on my iPad. I'm about to pull up the emoji. Right.
Brian's pulling up the emoji. Nerd. I'm sorry, Keith.
I'll take either.
So at any rate, they were planning on making this change. Well, Windows 10 anniversary update has come out, and Microsoft has switched. It used to be a toy gun, and now it's the emoji of a real revolver. They've swapped places.
So Microsoft is getting more pro actual gun, and Apple is getting PC with water pistol.
Right, but that's just a difference of opinion. What we're talking about here, though, is something that we've talked about on the show in the past, which is misunderstanding. What happens on your phone if you send a water pistol and the person has a Windows machine on the other end and they see a revolver?
Ooh, interesting. It's like a language problem.
Yes, that is the whole misunderstanding thing that we were talking about, emojis, and this is a potential for a very wide misunderstanding.
Like a picture of a little boy and a picture of a little girl and a picture of a slide and a picture of a gun is different than a squirt gun.
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, what I love about this is people look at emoji and they see cute little symbols. They see cutesy things that they want to send to their friends. Nobody seems to think about it as actual language.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, just...
What do you mean think of it as actual language? They are absolutely language.
I know, but that's not how they're looked at. They look more like stickers that people have in some apps. And
I think it depends on how people use it. If you use it in a sentence, it's pretty clearly part of the language, right? It's an
Yeah, I was thinking language. They're a crutch to avoid the fact that most communication is nonverbal. So that's where emojis come in, is to try to bring in that nonverbal.
You guys know in iOS you can actually set up shortcuts, so you type a certain thing and then something else actually emerges after you type it. So like for me, I use GS. If I ever type GS, it expands to GeekSpeak. Very easy, right? Because I type that a lot. I also, long time ago, set up the word rocket to be the rocket icon, like when emoji first came out.
The rocket emoji.
Emoji, yeah. And I definitely thought about the idea of like setting up all the emoji words, right? So anytime I type those words, they just turn into emoji. Like it would always happen. If I said, gun, it would just turn into one of these guns. Just the idea of seeing what it would look like to always use emoji as much as possible. Have you ever done that? Have you tried doing sentences with emoji?
I have as a joke, yeah.
As a joke, yeah.
Manually.
It takes a long time. It actually is hard to do. I agree that having them not appropriate to each other is a problem. What is the emoji description of the gun symbol?
Oh, yeah. What's the textual description?
In iOS 10, it is a green squirt gun with a red cap at the tip.
What I like is it's sitting right next to the cigarette.
The very realistic cigarette. And right above the very realistic bomb and kitchen knife.
Didn't they change the direction in which they didn't change the direction in which it's pointing. There was something about another emoji that they wanted to change so that it could work with this. I think it was the water droplets faced the wrong way to use with the emoji.
That's a pretty intense page of emoji, man. Clashing swords, hammer.
Yeah, but it's not trying to... The funny thing about this is what the symbol is isn't meant to endorse a single idea. It's meant to express an idea. And yeah, by changing what that symbol is, you're changing that expression.
I don't see anything else that's a toy of the thing.
Right.
Everything else is the thing. I mean, because you could take the flashlight and make it a toy of a flashlight. Like, interesting. I think it makes some sense, but is the emoji description actually a toy, or is it supposed to be a gun? I would assume it's supposed to be a gun.
I believe it's simply gun or pistol, but have you...
I believe it's gun. Pistol. It is. You're right. And as it turns out, most folks out there that are using it, whether they be Mozilla or Twitter when they change the icon, or LG or Samsung, they all have with their fonts some rendering of it. They're all a revolver, an actual gun. So right. Apple is now the odd one out. Yeah,
where Microsoft was out of line, they've come in line.
Right.
Apple's
That's funny.
Which is probably Microsoft's rationale for doing so. At the same time, yeah, having an actual revolver versus an obvious water pistol.
That is a very different meaning. I think that Microsoft did the right thing and Apple did the wrong thing. Yeah. I think that it's appropriate to have words that are hard and harsh. That's why we have a large vocabulary. It doesn't mean that you're suggesting to use them, and you shouldn't change the meaning of a word. So that's what they're doing, right? Is changing the meaning.
Absolutely. Especially since it can be used across platforms and you don't know the meaning that the other person sees.
Yeah, interesting. Can you like hard press it and get two different versions?
No. you only have green, just green plastic.
You can do that with the faces and stuff, right?
Anything with skin color, you can choose the shade apart from the yellow.
So can you send that to me? Text me and I'll see what I get. All right, so you're going to text me a gun. I think you're joking.
And I'm going to create a moral dilemma for you.
Let's drop that since it's radio and let's talk about the other thing. Let's talk about wide color gambit, right?
Gambit? No, gambit? This is not a gambit.
I love that you've got a story about color.
Wide color gamut?
Gamut.
Gamut. Yes. Yes. Once again, my previous life in visual graphics is going to come in handy here, except for this is radio.
Right.
Okay. No, I thought that was interesting because this is especially interesting for web developers, but anybody out there who uses web pages might want to know this. So we've been going through an explosion of screen technologies in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. We've gotten retina screens with high DPI. We've gotten different screen sizes since phones have come around. All these things web developers have had to deal with. Well, something that's relatively new, it's in the iMac 5K, and I believe some other models of some PCs have wide gamut displays. And this is going to become more and more common. And the WebKit team, the open source engine for the Safari web browser, and it used to be the Chrome browser as well before they forked off, that team has gotten a early control in there to choose what your color gamut is. And I wanted to talk about this because all my years in graphics, I never fully thought about what the gamut means. But do you know how colors are represented generally?
On RGB.
RGB. What
have rods and cones in your eyes.
No. What kind of values does it use?
0 to 255 for red, green.
Well, that's for RGB. Then you have luminance, saturation, brightness.
And that's 0 to 100%.
It depends upon which value you're doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it depends on where you're going on the wheel. So it's not necessarily, it's 100% for like brightness or saturation, but the luminance or, the luminance is going to be, 0 to,
but everything you can present on a computer screen can be done with RGB and values from 0 to 255.
It depends upon the
right?
computer screen.
Oh, well, really?
Yeah. And it depends if it's 8-bit or 16-bit because, okay. 256 numbers in three different channels of color. It's not going to represent, that's just 8-bit color.
Right.
That's not counting gamma because the human eye does not see a linear scale very right. well. We actually see light differently. So you have to do gamma correction, which is a lightness correction.
So the whole point of this is our displays can show a certain number of colors and in a certain range of colors. And our eyes actually see outside that range. There are colors that are in some beautiful coffee table printed books that are representing a color purple or a violet that we can't show on our computer screens. Until recently with
greens, greens are a big thing. Like our eyes are able to see shades of green very well, but we have the exact same amount of channel space for red as we do for green, even though we have a lot better ability to discern shades of green.
Right. So our screens just are not representing the green like we can see it.
Yeah.
So with the introduction of these high gamut screens that can actually show colors outside of what, we're used to seeing on computer screens, they've had to, deal with that for the web. And they've made some new standards in there that allow you to have 16-bit color. So you're representing color not with a 256 number, but with a fraction between
65,536.
Well, I mean, they're getting to the point where, I mean, this is just a decimal between 0 and 1. So it can scale beyond that if you give your numbers and
scales of 1/65,536.
but still, how do you display the maximum color, the brightest green that you have in that when your color range already was capped out at that? So that's where these color gamuts come in, and these profiles. So you can read up on this for more details, but these, whenever you see a color profile, what it's doing is it's saying the maximum that I can display of this green is here at this 256 number or the one number, but that is going to be different on a different color profile. And it's just scaling the numbers between 0 and 1. So what you could see on a regular RGB screen that was green, that was 256. On this high gamut screen, that same one is going to be a value of maybe 200. And you get 56 more numbers beyond, or 56 more greens that are beyond that green that is on a normal screen. And any web developer that is going to be dealing with high gamut screens, you should look into this.
Yeah. If you think you understand color on computers, you don't understand color.
And for non-web developers, we've got a whole world of extra colors coming our way.
And so what does this have anything to do with the new high dynamic range monitors that actually have higher brightness than current monitors?
I believe it does. That's the next realm in television. I believe it's the same technology.
Well, high dynamic range is also talking about the ability to make something, one portion of it, much brighter, another part, right, a deeper black.
We had a demo and have them together. Work a while ago of one of these new screens, and it was fantastically bright. So bright that it was hard to look at it. So,
well, if you turn all of it up.
Well, what it was the video they had was a shot where someone was coming into a dark room, and they were passing across a doorway, and the sunshine was in there, and you could see the room. And then when they went across, and the sun was kind of behind their head, it was extremely hard to see that. Like, it was so bright. And it definitely had a more real feeling to me. Like, it looked like a window more than like a screen. And it's something that you kind of get used to what your screens can do, and therefore you think of that as normal. And once they do more than you expect, it's kind of neat.
And it looked like the sun. What color was it?
It was white.
Yes. Yeah. That, fun fact for everyone out there, the sun is not yellow.
And the shadows, what color are they?
The shadows, what color are they?
Yeah. If you're a painter, what color do you make the shadows?
Purple.
No, the shadow blues. Color. You've got this giant blue dome that surrounds you outside. So if you're outside and you've got a bright white sun and then you've got a shadow, that shadow is going to get tinted blue from this enormous blue dome.
My mom
around
always
us.
Said, dark, I didn't know that. Make dark, dark shadows purple. She's a painter.
And then you have people say, like, wait, no, I look at sunrises and sunsets and I see that the sun is yellow. No,
it is.
It's not. That's because you're looking at it through the lens of the atmosphere at its thickest.
All the blue's been removed.
Yes, and when you're
overhead. See, why is the sky blue? If you're curious more.
Yeah.
I think we're time to start wrapping this up. Either of you have a story you want to cover, and should we do it in the post or do it now?
I have a quick one.
Okay.
Which is Waze, the mapping app.
It's a great
app.
It's
owned by Google. Yeah. They have a new safety feature that's coming out soon.
It's not the passenger button.
The passenger button?
Yeah, yeah. If you're really not doing things right and you try to put in your address while you're driving, it's going to say, oh, are you a passenger? You can only do this if you're a passenger.
No, that is something that is already in there. This is a new feature, which is a child reminder.
What do you mean?
Oh, I saw this today.
Because 37 children since 1998, 37 children die of heat stroke on average per year because they're left in the car.
Oh, God, that's a nightmare.
And there are a lot of times where, as if anyone is a parent, they understand, like, that 18-month-old, you are tired. You are beat. And you make dumb decisions, mm-hmm, or you just don't think. And so what it will do is you can have it where you say, like, I need a child reminder. I have a kid, so I'm going to put this little safety feature on there so that whenever you come to a destination and it stops, it will pop up a little ding saying, child reminder, don't leave Fido in the car, or don't leave your kid in the car.
I don't feel like, first off, don't name your child Fido or Fido. I don't think that kind of reminder works, because if it fires every time, you just forget that, just like you forget the kids in the back seat. Why does that help you?
That's the essential UI problem there.
Yeah,
right? It's going to have to be random.
Constant reminders fail.
Right.
Because this is intended for someone who has their child with them all the time.
Yes, but
if
anything,
your child's with you every time and it always reminds you to get out, you're going to dismiss that thing regularly, so much so it becomes habitual, and therefore you won't see it.
Even if it's within, like, you come to a stop and you're at the stop, and then it realizes you are not moving, like you're in a car anymore, and it waits 90 seconds. Then you always have to turn it off, but that time when you're reminded,
every 90
seconds back.
You get out of your car, something goes blong, you're going to turn it off. Eventually, you'll just turn it off without thinking about it.
So the way the human brain works is we are designed to see differences or notice differences. And we get inattentional blindness. Is that the right term?
Something like that.
Yeah. When something is repeated, we are able to ignore it. A crying baby, we're almost able to ignore if it happens all the time.
And by the way, the rule you do with this about children in a car is you just never, ever leave the car without the child. You just never do that. Because you could get distracted. How do you know what will happen in the grocery store? It's only going to be 2 minutes and it's overcast.
Actually,
but what happens in the grocery store is totally not your control.
Yeah, one thing I've seen as an alternative to this, the non-geeky answer that what we've been talking about being superior, is you get a stuffed animal and you put it into the car seat. And whenever you are putting your child into the car seat, you put the stuffed animal mm-hmm. into the front seat or someplace in good vision. So then when you are getting out and you see, you know, the stuffed animal, because you're not looking in the back of the car, that's what happens. You're not looking in the back of the car. You go, oh, wait, I'm forgetting something.
See, I think the reason why this happens to people is not because they forget their kid is in the car. It's because they left the car with a kid in the car with the intention of being back, and then they forgot.
Okay, I think you're assuming too much there. I mean, the one time I've seen this happen, two parents came to work with a child, and they both thought the other one had the child.
Interesting.
But they parked. Somebody thought the other one had it, and several hours later, for whatever reason,
so
it became apparent.
Safer to put the kid in the front seat than you don't.
No, we need to have backseat drivers.
You put the keys to your house under the kid's butt, and then you also put your grocery bags under them.
So,
and then it's impossible to do what you want to do.
I'm going to out myself as, you know, stereotypical horrible parent. I've had times where I've driven from. It's a short distance. I mean, it was like 3 miles, mm-hmm. but from my parents' house back to my house, and then get out of the car and getting my daughter to,
and she's on the roof,
and she wasn't buckled in. She stayed in her seat, but she wasn't buckled in. And luckily, I wasn't going very fast.
If that's the worst you've done, you're a fine parent. That happens all the time.
Really, but at the same time, it's like. I my heart was pounding. I'm like, oh my god.
Okay, see, that's why you know you're a good parent. Because when you found out you messed up, your heart was affected. If you're like, yeah, then you're a bad parent.
So like all ills with cars, we have to wait until we have self-driving cars?
Yeah.
Geekspeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and used with permission, and Geekspeak is creative. You know what? You just said we need a robot. You said it again. You didn't even know you said it. Take care of your kids. Use a robot.
Robots are cool. Oh, I've got a great project where you can use a Raspberry Pi to control your sprinkler system.
Geekspeak is a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 user. Stuff any way you'd like, just let them know the geek said hello. Thanks to our intern Chandler, our patrons, who are awesome, and you can learn more about that at geekspeak.org/support if you're curious. And our support geek, Greg Merkley, who provided this week's working title, Russian Trolls Hunt Pokemon on Buses.
Nice.
On tall buses, maybe even. All right, cool. Theme song by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music, and thank you for being here for episode 33 of season 16. Miles Elam.
Yep.
Brian Young.
Hey.
Thank you so much both for joining me today.
All right.
It's a blast.
Always a pleasure.
What were you saying about Arduino and what?
Oh, I just saw a fun project.
Raspberry
Pi. Raspberry Pi to control sprinklers.
For what purpose? Just to like manage
them? Because you could tie into the weather and you can know that it's going to rain today, so you're not going to water at all, and you can check sunlight hours and start doing the watering right at evening. And
honestly,
like that.
Arduino, I think, is a better choice for
it
that.
It probably is, but I like being able to get into the Raspberry Pi too.
Buy a $150 unit that already does that.
Of course you can, but you can't go back and reprogram it.
No, that's true. I can't. But
dude, two galvanized nails in plaster of Paris, you know, so gypsum. There you have your water sensor.
Yeah, and then you need a processor, and then you need
you need something that can
relays or
all you need to get the weather is you need something that can do Wi-Fi, which is an ESP8266.
You've all done the sensing. Congratulations! Now you have to control the rain gauge systems. You've got to have a
relay. Yeah,
pin controls. Yeah. So after you've done all this and created your whole board, $150 is looking mighty cheap. That's all
no,
I'm saying.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
A relay board does not cost that much.
No, a relay board's going to be $20, right? You're going to get your output board. You're going to, like, if you're going to do Arduino, you're going to do Arduino Max, right? And then you're going to get, like, four relay. You're doing 12 volts, so you can't do that. You have to have a relay. So then your relay breaker board, I mean, the whole thing, you're going to get under, you know, $100. You got to put it all together. You have an enclosure. You got to have a power supply. $150 starts looking pretty good.
Mm.
Just saying. That's all.
Then if you want your yard sprinklers to go off to music.
So that's the thing, yeah. Or if you want to hook that system in and have it control your infrared lights, which I did, which is kind of awesome, except that you have to use their app, and their app's kind of lame.
And if I wrote it myself. Sprinkler? Yeah. No. Drip irrigation.
Drip irrigation. Sprinklers are wasteful. Very wasteful.
You got me there.
So,
for you?
So post-show?
Yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
Okay, so...
So you know that because I said, like, the closing?
Yeah. And remember how years ago we talked about how researchers have been hacking into cars as they've been driving by?
Yeah.
And we talked about how, for example, with Jeeps, they were able to access the brakes and
stuff like that. Yeah, a big story a year ago.
Well, the logical conclusion has happened. A couple of folks in Houston have been stolen 30 Jeep and Dodge vehicles.
Doing what?
And they did it using a laptop computer where they remotely connected up to it. They hacked into it, unlocked the vehicle, started it up, and drove away.
All without a key.
And without breaking into the car.
Oh, God.
Without physically breaking into the car.
So this is just using the network that already is connected to the car.
Yes.
So you had a specific number, and you said a couple. So were they caught?
Yes, yes. These particular gentlemen were caught. But the funny thing is, though...
Was there a baby in the back seat?
The funny thing, though, is that after, I forget what the date was, maybe it was like 1998 or something like that, because of the electronic countermeasures put into modern cars.
Low jack?
Where you have a microchip inside the key.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
Things like that. Auto theft has gone down dramatically. Carjacking went up, but people actually going and breaking.
Nonviolent crimes went down. Violent crimes went up. Yay! Right.
But a Honda Accord, late model Honda Accords, became a really big item because they was just the year before they went to this new system. So they ended up being this high target for it. Now you have cars that are, the newer models are more vulnerable than the 10-year-old models.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
In that whole retrograde, going backwards kind of way.
I had post-show stuff, and I was going to do that, but then we did it in the middle of the show with the guns. I guess that was kind of post-show.
Did you put that there just because you saw the emoji coming up?
No, I want to talk about it during the show, but then as we were talking about it, it felt like it wasn't very geek-speaky, I guess.
And so you wanted to talk about rats instead?
No, I'm saying that as we talked about it, it didn't sound very... geek speaking, but sorry about that.
Well, here's the funny thing. Okay, yes, we're all tech geeks and all that and stuff, but we oddly, all of us that come on the show are also, you know, makers kind of people that deal with...
In other words, you're saying that we're somewhat well-rounded people.
I think there'd be people out there that disagree with that statement.
I meet so many people that are shocked that I know how to use a hammer and a computer.
And not in that order. So speaking of weird things we do, I was fixing the pool pump at up here, right? And it basically...
Already geekier than the last story you did.
I was using infrared technology. I was modifying it.
All right.
$25 camera that's on your dash has IR capabilities. Mm-hmm. So I bought one, right? And then the lens is a wide angle lens, so that doesn't work on a scope of a gun, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to figure out a lens that I have around the house that I can pull it apart and swap it out. And so I've got on my dad like all these things, little kids toys, and the next thing I was going to use is a laser pointer. And then Maggie goes, we could get traps. And I'm like, god damn it.
but wait a second. Didn't this all start? I remember you telling me the story. This all started when the electronic trap didn't work well enough.
It was electronic trap. The skunk got in the electronic trap, and when it fried its hand and didn't die, it sprayed the box, and nothing's gone in that box since then. So I have this $45 thing that's been used once to scare a skunk. I actually got a rat before that, and yeah, it hasn't been very effective. So that's been like turning me off on traps. But that's the wonderful thing, is this is like electronic sensing device with high voltage and stuff. No, the one I'm using is like a spring and a little catch.
Does it have a bucket? Just throws it in the bucket?
No, it doesn't do that.
Oh.
Where was I with that? Oh, so the pump is going, when I turn on. And that means that it's not turning. That's not good for a motor, because it'll burn out the system. Of course, it probably has an overheat protection system, so if it gets too hot, it'll turn off. But in any case, so we're working on the pump, and it was running beforehand. We changed all the filters, and then we start up, and it doesn't work. I'm like, okay, this is weird. Why would it not work now? But it was running. When we turned it off, it was running. And then we did all this work, and it didn't. Oh, well, it was hot, but its running process was cooling it down enough such that it didn't trip that thermal sensor. Okay, all I have to do is relax. So I'm going to go for a swim, and when I'm done, I'll turn it on, and it will work. And I'm swimming, and my daughter and I are playing, and get out of the pool, and I go over there. I'm like, yeah, flip it. Damn it. No, it didn't. It had made no sound at this point.
Okay.
So then I'm like, okay, that's not the problem. And so I took the whole thing apart. I mean, I started taking it apart. And one of the things I found out right away was that the capacitor in the back of it had blown its juice, if you will. You know, a large capacitor actually has electrolytic material in it. And when it pops, it oozes goo. That's the best way to explain it. Sometimes,
if you wire it backwards.
If you wire it backwards, sometimes it explodes goo. But basically, if you see a capacitor and there's moisture around it, the electrolytic capacitor, you know that it's gone bad.
And it's most likely not manufactured in Japan.
Why is that?
The cheap Chinese ones tend to do that.
Oh, really?
Japanese ones tend not to.
You're saying a Japanese one wired backwards won't explode?
No, well, the Japanese one wired backwards will explode.
First off, these are non-polarized because it's AC circuits, right? So this is just a non-polarized one. You can't do it backwards. But anyways, it has goo around it. And I'm like, hey, Gwendolyn, my daughter, hey, so that right there shows you the capacitor is bad. And, you know, doing the whole electronics geeky dad thing, which means she's like never going into technology because I'm so annoying. So, I go ahead and order one. It takes me, I couldn't find one locally. I order one, put it in today, do the whole thing. Not the problem, which is irritating because I know that thing failed. Of course, it could be that the other capacitors, two capacitors, a run capacitor and a start capacitor. So what am I doing? I took the whole thing apart. I'm bringing it down to the shop. I'm going to find out what's wrong with it tomorrow. I stopped like troubleshooting. I decided I'm just going to take it to someone and pay them and have them tell me something. I think that represents I'm growing up. I'm not really sure.
Yes. But did you check for a rat inside the motor?
I didn't. I should have.
You know how to make someone look guiltier? Like, you take some video of someone.
Okay.
And you go, oh, they look normal. How do you make them look guilty?
Add music.
Well, yeah, you can
make
do that
it grainy.
Shake
your camera.
Make it go in slow motion.
Make it slightly slower or like really slow motion? Just slightly slower means that every motion they're doing is intentional, which means they're devious.
What they found is that slowing down footage in criminal cases may dramatically sway life or death decisions.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah, I mean, it's horrible because it's so easy to manipulate people and they can make such important decisions around people's lives.
I was going to say, if you have a close-in camera, that'll also make them look more sinister. Yeah. Wide shots tend to be for comedy.
If you're looking at someone as a slow motion, but it may also affect you if you're in a low sampling rate, like say a closed caption where someone, you know, they jump from point to point because you're getting one frame every 2 seconds.
Yeah. What about the color in that? Does it matter what color gamut?
No, infrared. You can see the evil in them.
All right, I think we're done.
Oh, by the way, you called them the Soviet Union last week.
I said that, but then I corrected myself quickly, didn't I?
It only got halfway out, but you never corrected yourself.
Hey. Oh, it didn't?
It's not like Putin ain't trying.
Yes.
You know, when I was a kid, like in the early 80s, I remember always saying Russia and people correcting me and saying Soviet Union.
Me too.
And I'd be like, what? Oh, Soviet Union. No, Russia's doing this. No. The Soviet Union's doing that.
Technically, it's not Russia now. It's the Russian Federation.
Right. So what we should use is Russian Federation. Then I won't be slipped up to try to correct myself and say Soviet Union.